podcast this week, we talk to the hottest trio this side of Salah, Firmino and Mane in the shape of Daniel Brühl, Dakota Fanning and Luke Evans, stars of the ruddy bloody new Netflix show The Alienist. Plus all the usual news and nonsense on the movie podcast that just saw Peter Dinklage walk into a classical music shop. And do you know what he said?
Oh God.
He said, "Where's the handle? Where is it? I must find the handle." That's what he said. I was there. You can't prove otherwise.
There's probably a kind of Wagner Ride of the Valkyries gag in there somewhere, but I can't find it.
Then Arnold Schwarzenegger walked in. Do you know what he said? Anyway. Hello, pod. I'm Chris Hewitt, and welcome to the Empire Podcast, which once again this week is brought to you by those wonderful peepholes at Sky Cinema, the dedicated home for movie lovers. Later in the show, as is now usual, I will be pointing out a couple of movies that you can watch on Sky Cinema this lovely bank holiday weekend. The weather's going to be very nice. You guys got any plans?
I'm working.
Oh, because you got the thing.
Yeah.
Jimbo, what are you going to be doing?
That's an excellent question. I suspect I shall be having a very exciting weekend full of glitz and glamour, and let's be honest, I'll be watching Netflix in my pants.
Not Sky Cinema, then.
I might be. You never know. I'll see what whim takes me. Perhaps I shall, for the sake of pod loyalty.
Yes, James will be watching Sky Cinema, and he will be watching my picks from Sky Cinema.
What
just
are they?
Two movies. I'll tell you later on in the show.
Tell me now.
We've established it.
I want to know now.
The template has been well established
for
the last 4 weeks.
Okay, give me one film that's on Sky Cinema.
One film that's on Sky
give
Cinema.
Me one that I should watch.
One of them picking this week, or just a film
recommend
that's on Sky Cinema?
Recommend me one of your picks right now.
No, that ruins the section later on.
But I can't wait. I want to know. I want to know what I'm doing on the weekend.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. Patience.
Instant gratification.
Did you learn nothing from Spider-Man Homecoming's final sting?
I think we've all had a terrifying insight to Jimbo's lovemaking technique.
I'd like to do it in front of Sky Cinema. Oh,
no, that's not where I was going with that.
That's not what we were saying?
No, I was... Anyway, just two movies from the 1,000-plus films that are available on demand on Sky Cinema, including a brand-new premiere every day that I will not tell you about until later in the show.
The film that I'm going to be doing stuff in front of. Okay, good. Good to know.
God, I hope not.
God.
I really hope not.
Do you think the sponsor's going to ask for a refund?
Quite possibly. this week, you've already heard them. Getting up my grill. I'm joined by two colleagues of such lethal cunning. First up, our geek queen, Helen O'Hara. What are you doing on your phone, Helen?
I'm preparing the news section.
Oh my God, you're such a professional. You're diligent. You are... Mm-hmm. What's the other word? No, that's too insulting. Anyway, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks
you know,
so
I
much.
Haven't... I've dialed down. I was thinking about this the other day on the Hamilton references ever since I saw Hamilton.
Yes.
And you would have thought that I would have dialed them up.
No, because you always... talk more about the things you know nothing about.
I think Helen has just done a lovely segue to our Avengers Infinity War spoiler special. 2.5 hours of me talking about something I know nothing about. And you guys are there as well. That is available right now. And this guy's on it as well. James Dyer, how are you?
Hello, I'm fine. Team Thanos.
Oh my God.
We're back to this again.
Anyway, we're going to be very, very careful about spoilers. Because some people still haven't seen this film. They haven't seen the bit where Cap explodes. They haven't seen that yet.
Oh my God. His head does not fall off. You were lying about that, Chris.
Yeah. But the thing is, I'll be right one day.
No.
Not necessarily. His beard will fall off, but that's probably the extent of it.
Law of averages, if I keep claiming that Captain America's head will fall off in a film, law of averages suggests I will be right.
That's not what the law of averages suggests.
Speaking of Captain America hair, have you heard that Nick's doing an Avengers hair challenge?
What?
He's growing his hair. He's aiming for Steve Rogers' hair. Like, that's what he's going to... And he's going to... He might go full Winter Soldier, you know, if time permits. So he's going to go through the many stages
this
of
this
Avenger
is Empire's Nick DeSemlin.
Empire's Nick DeSemlin, yes.
Okay. Is this a sponsored thing? Should we be giving money to a charity?
It's hard to say. But sure, send me some money and I'll pay him not to do it.
His hair is probably closer, I would say, to Doctor Strange at the moment.
I think.
Yeah, he's going to have to do a lot of growing out to get it to the wonderful, lush thickness of Steve Rogers' hair.
Verdant liveliness of Steve Rogers.
Just hair you want to run across, isn't it?
He does have extraordinary hair.
Yeah.
Mm.
Can you bathe in hair?
We could try. Mm. We could find out.
Is hair rich in nutrients? Could you survive on a diet of Steve Rogers' hair?
No,
it probably depends on the conditioner you use.
Doesn't it form a what do you call it? Those things in your stomach, a ball. If you eat hair, you get this. Essentially a hairball in your stomach.
Ew.
It can become. Oh, there's a word for it as well. It's used in like magic. Not I'm kidding, sorry. It is actually.
What?
It is actually used in magic.
It's used in magic.
Well, I'm not saying it works.
A magic hairball.
Yeah, so, the name will come to me halfway through this.
So just to be clear, we've just started the podcast and we are eating Steve Rogers' hair and creating a ball in our stomachs, which will then be used for magic.
Yeah. What's your favourite scene in the movie in which someone eats someone's hair? Mine is, there's a moment in Evil Dead 2 where one of the baddies eats someone's hair. I would do that to Steve Rogers. Just imagine what conditioner he uses.
I don't think he does. I think it's natural. I
think that's
the
natural?
Goodness just shines out of his hair.
So good. If you want more primo Marvel content like this, go and check out our Avengers Infinity War spoiler special.
Yeah.
We never got around to it. And Nick cannot grow his hair long enough to be Bucky. And that's a bad look. I don't even think Sebastian Stan pulls that look off. His hair is closer to Doctor Strange, and he should stick while he's ahead.
You think? Okay.
Yeah. He should quit while he's ahead, rather than a phrase that doesn't exist. James Dyer is here as well. And we do have a question, and that question has been sent in.
It's a bezoar.
What?
There we go.
That's the name of the thing.
Shut
up. It can also be a stone from like a goat stomach, but also
bezoar.
There are hair bezoar.
I just thought that was like a reservoir that you just get on really well with. Just, you know.
How do you spell that?
Bezoar.
Okay.
Bezoar. That sounds like some kind of dinosaur.
So do you.
Thanks.
It's a small stony concretion which may form in the stomachs of certain animals, especially ruminants, and which was once used as an antidote for various ailments. But you can have hair ones as well. Anyway.
Wow. This has been very informative.
Let's take a question that was sent in via email. This is from Team Hiddles Goddesses, and they ask, as a collective entity, do you think the Marvel Cinematic Universe will ever come to an end?
Presumably. I mean, all good things come to an end. We know this.
Yes, from finale Star of Star Trek, The Next Generation.
But I do actually think it will come to an end, yes, because all things
do.
And I think also all film trends, film series, film whatevers eventually come to an end. I'm still waiting for James Bond, admittedly, but really, like everything else does, like there comes a fallow period when things don't work as well as they used to.
Mm-hmm.
They try to double down by sticking to what they know works, which doesn't work because you have to keep innovating or things fail and people get bored. And then, you know, you get Disney in the 80s. So, like, there will come a time when it stops working. I don't think we're there yet.
Well, all things in the universe head towards entropy, don't they? It is a natural state, degradation.
Having spent a lot of the Avengers spoiler special on astrophysics, I thought I'd give it a rest today.
Yes, we are all heading towards entropy. That wasn't a threat, I'm just saying.
No, but the heat death of the universe will kill the Marvel franchise, you're right.
Team Thanos.
Oh my God.
Yeah, no, I mean, it'll come to an end. I mean, ultimately, it'll come to an end when it stops making lots of money, really. Isn't that really what will happen? It seems unlikely that they'll make a creative decision to kind of, you know, if it's still storming ahead at the box office, Disney are not likely to...
That's it, guys, we're done.
...slot in the cash cow for burgers. But
well, Cap's head fell off, and that's it. Gosh. We couldn't go on after that.
But yeah, I think
I wouldn't be able to.
I think the fallow period thing is right. I think rather than end it, they'll put it on hiatus until it feels fresh again and then bring it back. Like Star Wars, you know what I mean? It will go into a dormant state where you'll think it's defeated, but actually it will return and kill us all.
I think it will outlive us all.
Neither of us put a date.
Yeah.
This is true.
On our thinking.
But this week, wasn't there a story that Marvel have planned up to 2025? So they have professional plans in place for movies up to 2025.
Which is more than any of us have. So
that will outlive at least one of us in this room.
Absolutely.
What do you know that we... Never mind. I don't want to know.
Just a law of averages, Helen.
Yeah.
Right.
Law of averages suggests
Chris.
We are doing this podcast in 2025, 7 years from now, one of us will be dead.
If any mathematicians are listening, if you could please write into Chris and explain what the law of averages is, I would super appreciate it.
Sooner or later,
so
I will read that letter. Law of averages... dictates that the longer it sits on my desk, the greater the chances are that I will read it.
That's not how your desk works. I know how your desk works.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I plan to die in 2018. So,
how many Avatar sequels do you need to see before you're happy dying?
Do you want the honest answer?
No.
I will be happy with seeing no Avatar sequels.
Right, okay.
But I will see Avatar sequels because, as we all know, we should not write off James Cameron.
Never.
And we expect good things from
great
the Avatar
sequels.
Great things, in fact, from the Avatar sequels. Redefining things. Cinema, genre redefining things.
Mm. I love an Avatar.
I know you do. I know you do. You must be excited about the four that he's making
the
at
next
the moment.
18 films, yes. I'm very, very excited about them, I think.
He is stopping. That's the thing. He is stopping at five. Or so he says, anyway.
Mm.
But once Avatar 5 comes out, which I believe is actually scheduled for 2025. So,
Mother Awa willing, yes.
I'm sorry, Helen, you won't be around to see it.
What? Since when am I the one who's dying first?
We had a discussion earlier and we chose you.
Oh.
Sorry.
No, it's random. You will, I believe, what's the word? You will entropy. After,
that's not the word.
All right.
If you're an astrophysicist and you can write into Chris and explain how entropy works, that would also be super good.
People will go, well, why did she die? Why? What was it that killed her? And it's like, well, she was eating nothing but Steve Rogers' hair.
It had turned into a bazaar. A bazaar of cap. A cap bazaar. I don't know what's happening.
I'm interested in how you see my life going, that you think I'm going to have the opportunity.
Excuse me. No, this you're like a really shit serial killer who collects celebrities' hair. Like, I know you've got Spike Jonze's hair on, like, because I've seen
true.
It.
That is
so who
true.
Knows who else you've been nicking follicles from over the years? I mean, I don't know.
Hey, those were donated.
Mm-hmm.
Do you still have it?
Probably.
Should we tell people?
Know.
So Spike Jonze came into the office for a web chat.
For a web chat, yes, with the director of Jackass 3.
Jackass 3.
Whose name is Jeff...
Tremaine. Okay.
And Jeff Tremaine,
who
was sitting next to Spike Jonze, while Spike Jonze was giving a very lucid and intelligent answer to a question, decided to cut off a small piece of
because that's
his
what
hair.
Those crazy Jackass boys do.
And then he gave it to Spike Jonze. He didn't quite know what to do with it, so seeing some sellotape and a piece of paper on my desk, he sellotaped it to the piece of paper so that we could clone him.
Wow.
Oh, I mean, unfortunately, he's an idiot because...
Well,
the follicles
were
not present, so there was no DNA to clone him from.
That which obviously frustrated us all mightily in our attempts to clone him with the office.
But law of averages states, Helen, that if you keep trying, you will eventually find entropy.
So I think I still have that somewhere.
If you want to have your question read out on the Empire podcast, we are on email, podcast@empireonline, as Team Hiddles Goddesses found out to their cost. We're also on Twitter as @EmperorMagazine. Use the hashtag EmperorPodcast or chances are we will not see it. And we are on Facebook as well, where we are Empire Mag
Zine.
There we go. All good. Happy days. Right, should we talk about some movie news? What hath happened?
So much hath happened.
There have been lots of little things and some big things too. I'll start with a little thing, which I thought was quite sweet. Kathy Kennedy went out on Twitter and gave a little congratulatory note to Infinity War from A Galaxy Far, Far Away, which showed Rey handing the lightsaber to Iron Man as a kind of well done for smashing our opening weekend, which continues a long tradition of doing this, which is quite nice. I did a little bit of research into this. It started in 1977, which was Steven Spielberg sent a nice little... he took out an Adam Variety to George Lucas, and it had R2-D2 fishing for Jaws, which I thought was a lovely little passing of the torch. And then there was another one back, which had the Star Wars team holding E.T. aloft when E.T. did it particularly well that year. And then E.T. crowned R2-D2 in another one, which was in 1997 when the special editions were released. And then George Lucas commissioned this wonderful artwork of all the Star Wars characters going down on the Titanic when Titanic did very well.
My word.
I didn't say going down on each other, just going down with the ship.
With the Titanic.
Oh, my.
Okay.
Yes. And then there's the T-Rex holding Mjolnir for Jurassic World, which is another ad that got taken out. Okay. That was a good one. Will the Avengers standing by?
There's no way the T-Rex would be worthy. That's a ridiculous cartoon.
There's another one of the T-Rex giving a medal to BB-8 as well. Which is good for The Force Awakens.
He's doing very well given the size of his arm.
Yeah, so it's been a bit sporadic. Like, some of these are for overall box office, some of them for opening weekend, others are for doing quite well on VHS. So it's a little bit of a random. It started sort of as just two friends. Yes. It's just Spielberg and Lucas, and now it's, you know, anyone's in on the action.
Steven Seagal once sent one to Michael Dudikoff.
With Cynthia Rothrock.
Yeah. Cynthia Rothrock.
So I thought that was sweet. I think it's nice when, you know.
Shall we give some context to this as well? This is because Avengers Infinity War did pretty well at the box office the weekend.
Yeah.
It set all kinds of new records. Records I actually genuinely didn't think of a break.
Mm.
Including the domestic opening weekend box office record, taking in a whopping $25.
No.
Oh. $257 million.
There you go.
Yeah. That's a lot more than what I just glanced at it.
Sure.
You could buy a lot of Bezos with that.
You certainly can. Mm. You could buy a lot of Steve Rogers hair product.
I don't think that's what he uses. Mm. Anyway.
Well, anyway, we could speculate what he uses, but this will become an Empire podcast after dark. So $257 million at the box office. That is $10 million more than the previous box office record holder, which was Star Wars The Force Awakens. And it made $630 million worldwide. It's already apparently at the $800 million mark and basically will make a shit ton of money, which is intriguing. And I really want to see how this movie holds up. Mm. We won't talk about the movie.
No.
But I did wonder whether it would generate repeat business.
Do you think it'll take third place? Do you think it'll make it? I mean, it's not going to touch Titanic and Avatar, I wouldn't have thought. But do you think it'll slide into third base?
slide.
So to speak.
Slide into third
spot.
Spot.
Base spot.
I think we just had another illuminating insight into Jimbo's lovemaking technique.
I think it might. Yeah,
right,
I think there is going to be repeat viewing because I think people are
a lot going on.
There's a lot going on, and I think people want to, you know, decode it, figure out what's there to be figured, and generally.
Hey, do you know how they could do that, Helen?
How's that?
They could listen to the Avengers Infinity War spoiler special, which doesn't have any of the people involved with the film, so you know it's good.
And, seamless.
It's there right now on your podcast device of choice. What else has happened?
Lupita Nyong'o is going to be Chow Yun-Fat. And that's, you know, interesting.
Oh.
Well, I mean, yes, she's going to be starring in a remake of The Killer, which
The
is
Killer.
Extremely exciting.
Yes,
a new,
version,
new
as, version. As the Chow Yun-Fat type character.
Yes.
John Woo used to send me Christmas cards every year. That's a true story.
That is.
He no longer does. I don't know what I did. Oh. I don't know what I said.
Did you send Christmas cards back?
I didn't know. Perhaps that's what it was.
I think that was probably
that's what
it was.
It was. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, so this is exciting because it's a phenomenal film and Woo is a fantastic action director. And Lupita Nyong'o in an action film, I'm kind of there. I think that's fascinating.
Me too.
Variety says John Woo will direct. This is really... I hate this word. I keep saying this word, intriguing. Helen, find me a new word.
This is
splendiferous.
Promising. This is splendiferously promising. Mm.
It's interesting that he's directing because for a long time he was just on as producer and they'd said they were looking for director. I didn't realise that he was now behind the camera
but
officially.
It's good. I feel like we need some John Woo action movies back in our lives. We haven't had enough in a little while.
Hard Target 2 I'm waiting for still.
Hard Target 2, of course, exists as a movie, James. As
does
you will
it?
Know, it stars our good friend
Scott Adkins. No way!
In
How
Hard
have
Target
I not
2.
Seen this? Does he bite the rattle off a rattlesnake? Because if he doesn't, then I don't want to know.
No, in a shock twist, a giant rattlesnake bites the head of Scott Adkins.
Wow, that's extraordinary.
Oh. Yeah, no one saw that one coming. Mm. But yeah, I'm
you know
really...
you shouldn't do that because if his hair gets in his stomach, it'll get a bazaar. you don't want a Scott Adkins bazaar.
I guess you don't. So anyway. Really excited about this because I love John Woo. I love the Hong Kong action movies of John Woo, less so his American work, although obviously he made Face Off, which is a brilliant film.
Mm.
But I love The Killer. I love Hard Boiled. I love A Better Tomorrow and A Better Tomorrow Too. And really, really excited about this. The Killer is one of those movies I used to just replay. I used to really piss my parents off because I had the VHS of it. And I would take over the TV and I would replay the same three action sequences from The Killer over and over and over again. So there's a bit where he is on a sort of dock side and he sees the flash of a sniper's rifle in the distance and then suddenly rolls forward and starts killing lots of people. And there's a bit where he's attacked in his apartment and he slides his chair back and pumps some bullets into some goons. And then there's the great action sequence at the end in the church, you know. And it's such a good film. I prefer Hard Boiled, but I love The Killer.
Well, Hard Boiled is funnier.
Is funnier, and the action's better in Hard Boiled as well. It's incredible.
More babies.
There are more babies, and about the same amount of doves. No, fewer doves. Fewer doves
and more
babies.
There are
way more doves in The Killer than there are in Hard Boiled.
Dove in Hard Boiled.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
I hope Lupita Nyong'o is as well dressed as Chow Yun-Fat was in those movies. He always had cool suits.
Cool suits.
So we want some cool suits for her. There is other news of her this
Surely
week.
Not.
Yeah,
oh, really?
There is. Jessica Chastain is leading an impressive group, which is scheduled to include Lupita, in a film called 355, which is a film about spies. So basically top agents from agencies all around the world having to work together to stop a bad guy doing a thing.
What does the title mean?
355 comes from the codename of a female spy during the American Revolution. So she was one of apparently the first spies for the US, and her identity is still unknown, apparently. So for a lot of women who work in the CIA and similar, it's a universal slang term for a female spy. So this would star Marion Cotillard, Penelope Cruz, Fan Bingbing, and Lupita Nyong'o as 355s.
Wow,
which
okay.
is a pretty cool idea. So the idea is to make this a sort of, you know, very much an ensemble piece, toe-to-toe with the big action franchises, although apparently it won't be as hyperbolic as some, and unlike the ones that revolve around, you know, a Bond or a Bourne, this is meant to be an ensemble piece, so everybody has their own distinct character traits.
Cool, sounds great.
Yeah.
Why is it pronounced hyperbolic when the word is hyperbole? But, of course, Natasha Bedingfield, in her song Lee's Words, calls it hyperbole. She pronounced it hyperbole.
That's regrettable.
It is regrettable. But then for years I thought that canapes was pronounced canapes. So
yeah. I used to think awry was pronounced awry. Things went awry.
I thought segue and seeg were different words.
Yeah.
See, the law of averages suggests that eventually you'll get one of these right.
Mm. No, that's not how that works.
Or fall into entropy.
Also not. Oh, God.
Okay, I'll just draw a line under this week's running gags. There we go. I think we've beaten those to death.
Has anyone seen the trailer for the new Robin Hood?
No, because it came out just before we came into the booth.
It's a bit Robin Hoodie.
One would hope.
Yeah. It's. I don't know. I'm very interested to see this. I really like Taron Egerton. I can't quite get a bead on it from the trailer. It has the, I don't want to say whiff of, but it has a sense that it could be the Robin Hood version of
Legend of the Sword.
Yeah, it has that going on.
Who refers to that film as Legend of the Sword, by the way?
What?
King Arthur, I think.
Yeah, and the Legend of the fucking Sword.
I'm pretty sure that was actually part of the title.
Yeah. Was it?
Yeah,
I'm
pretty sure. Yeah,
okay.
It was also part of the title.
Wasn't it called Bish Bash Bosh, Legend of the Sword?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
A little bit
Offa,
woo.
Offa, King Offa.
A little bit woo, a little bit wee, a little bit wee. Yeah.
No, we've had the little bit woo story already.
Yeah.
Hey.
Very good, very good. I definitely watched the trailer. It's certainly interesting. There's a lot of Arrow time, I think the Wachowskis might call it.
Okay.
There's lots of that. There's some funky bow work in it.
Wasn't that done in Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves already?
Ah, yes. But it doesn't have Mary Elizabeth Mastrantonio blowing in his face.
And he can probably do an English accent, so that probably helps as well.
Yeah.
There was also a trailer this week for the Teen Titans movie, which made me laugh way more than it should have done. It's extremely self-aware. It's kind of Deadpool for the PG generation, I think. And
so
I'm excited to see it.
Wow. They say faff and fark instead of, you know, those
more adult grown-up words.
Yeah,
anyway.
That I'm not going to say.
But I think, honestly, it does look really, really funny, and everything so far has looked good. And
this is the one where Nick Cage plays Superman at
long last. It happens.
Scratching that itch.
And speaking of Deadpool, and I never thought I'd utter these words, but I highly recommend everyone watch the new Celine Dion music video because it's fantabulous.
It's weird you say that because you say those words literally every week.
I know. My heart will go on.
We can't stop you saying it.
Yeah. She's done a video with Deadpool, and it's actually really funny. The song, well, it's a Celine Dion song, so take it or leave it, but the video is really funny. Very excited about that film, so yeah.
Wow.
Go and check that out.
What happens in this video?
Deadpool cavorts on stage. Now, I want to say it's not Ryan Reynolds because there's lots of, frankly, quite good dancing in it. But knowing Ryan Reynolds, it almost certainly is him in high heels cavorting on the stage. So, fair play.
I mean, they're fellow Canadians, right? So
yeah.
He's got to be.
I think so.
My understanding is that Ryan Reynolds is almost always in the suit.
Mm.
So it may well be him.
It's very entertaining. Very entertaining.
Very entertaining indeed. Is Celine Dion reinventing herself a la Michael Bolton and suddenly discovering the funny bone?
I think she's hilarious. She's been hilarious for a little while now. She's been wearing extraordinary outfits. If you look on websites like GoFug Yourself, FUG, her back catalogue over the last couple of years has been impressively weird. And even if some of the videos she's done for Vogue and people like that have been really, really fun. I think she knows exactly. I think she basically is just getting to the does not give a fuck stage of her career and is just letting it all hang loose, and she's doing well.
Someone I went to school with described her as having a voice like warm sick, which I thought was a little bit...
That's just, like, I mean, I'm sorry. Say harsh. What you like about her choice of music, but Celine Dion can sing.
Yeah.
Like,
I'm all for it. She was sprung on Jim Cameron on Titanic, which I thought was a nice touch, where he didn't... Yeah. Not literally, like, she wasn't waiting in his... She wasn't waiting in his bedroom, like, or anything like that. Yeah. She was, like, Horner got her to record the song, and then because he didn't want the song.
Yeah.
And then sprung it on him, and he really liked it. So, yeah. Nobody expects the Celine Dion.
Do you remember the name of the Leona Lewis track that ends the Avatar?
I See You.
I See You, yes. I see you, as in where you go when you're horribly injured.
That's not... In other news, Helen Mirren and Danny DeVito have joined the one and only Ivan, which appears to be about a CG gorilla.
Called Ivan?
Oh, this is the Sam Rockwell.
The Sam Rockwell, yeah. So she's his friend Stella, an elderly elephant. I mean, obviously, so... I don't know, but a really good voice cast, so it must be pretty funny, right? Bryan Cranston and Helen Mirren and Angelina Jolie and Sam Rockwell. I mean, come on, it's got to be worth something.
Got to be worth something. Got to be.
Westworld's getting a third season, surprising absolutely no one.
Literally couldn't be less surprising.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to say bothered.
No.
I mean,
no,
also that a little bit personally. But
don't be harsh. I love a bit of Westworld.
There is Michael B. Jordan news, so it's a good week. Hmm. He's working with Black Panther writer Joe Robert Cole for... a comics adaptation called Failsafe. So he would be playing, presumably, John Ravan, the legendary insurgent hunter who thought he had executed the last nano-enhanced super soldier. We've all been there. You thought you had. In a personal battle that included the kidnap of his daughter. But no! A decade later, sleeper agents around the country are activating, and it looks like he has to go back into action.
Oh my goodness.
I know.
Don't you hate when that happens? I call it a Tuesday.
At the moment he's producing, but he'll star once he reads the script, if he likes it.
There's an official synopsis to Shane Black's The Predator as well.
Ooh, what does it say?
Which is nice. It says, are you ready? The universe's most lethal hunters are stronger, smarter, and deadlier than ever before, having genetically upgraded themselves with DNA from other species. When a young boy accidentally triggers their return to Earth, only a ragtag crew of ex-soldiers and a disgruntled science teacher can prevent the end of the human race. That is a genuinely terrible synopsis, which is harsh because so I was on set of the film and I know the entire story, and that does not do it justice.
You know the entire story?
Yeah,
I know. Even though they had extensive...
I don't know. The entire story now may be very different, but I knew the entire story when I was on set, and that doesn't do it justice. It's actually much more interesting than that.
How did you know the entire story? Did you trip and fall and...
I tripped and fell in the script.
Yeah.
No, everyone was surprisingly unguarded. I was alone and largely unsupervised.
Were you in camouflage? Did they know you were there?
They didn't. They had no idea. There was something out there hunting them, and it wasn't... No.
You can't kill what can't be killed.
Yeah, that's right.
You can't stop.
You don't see the eyes of the demon.
If it bleeds, we can kill it.
What?
That was extraordinary.
Wow. I think we have a new contender for worst Arnie impression. Oh. I thought John Nugent's from a few weeks ago was... Wow, I don't think Helen's ever attempted an impression before.
That's true.
It's just because you know you're on borrowed time, and you're just...
Do it again.
I'm going to be dead in 5 years. Why not just go
5 years?
Yeah.
What? I thought you said 5 years.
I said by 2025. I didn't give you a date.
Oh, 7 years.
Wow. Yeah, 7 years. I mean,
fine.
Split the difference. I'm not going to say anything. I've said too much already. And I certainly want you to think worse or think twice about October 16th, 2024. I wouldn't want you to think about that. So just forget I said it.
You're going to feel so bad if I drop dead that day. So bad.
You are. She's not wrong.
I think I'll be the prime suspect.
You will.
If that were to happen. People would go, what's this? You know, like, you know, why was there a big bag of Chris Evans' hair in your apartment?
It's going to be that. It's while running her 15th marathon of the year, Helen coughs up a giant furball with red, white, and blue stripes, and that's the end of it.
And sneaking Chris Evans' hair into your sandwiches.
I don't understand how Chris Evans gets involved in all this. Like, getting his hair?
He's an innocent boy. Well, I can't say. Okay. Trade secrets. Yeah, okay. But let's just say... I just feel like I'm stealing into his house and stealing his hair when he's asleep.
I just feel like I'm just going to not let you ever cook for me, and then I'll be okay.
Yeah, seems fair. It also jocks off food poisoning as well in that case, doesn't it? Really? All right, okay. But can I just say Helen is not going to be killed off on the podcast. All right, in case you're worried. It's not sweeps for another few months anyway. So, you know, no one is safe. Jimbo, on the other hand.
Oh, God. I'm the Yeoman Johnson of this podcast, aren't I? I'm the red shirt. Like, we go on an away mission, I'm just fucked.
Like, you wouldn't welcome death tender embrace at this point.
That's fair.
Roland Emmerich's making a new film.
Hey, what's he making?
He's making Midway.
Oh, as in the Battle of?
As in the Battle of Midway. And it's budgeted at $100 million. It's going to start shooting this August.
A small film for him. Yes. Small personal film.
It's going to start shooting this August in Hawaii and Canada.
I volunteer for the set visit.
I was about to say exactly the same thing. Hawaii, you say?
Damn it! Woody Harrelson and Mandy Moore are going to star in this.
Oh, it's a couple.
I don't know whether they're going to be the main cast or the main leads in this, but I guess when you have $100 million and you're spending it all on recreating the Battle of Midway, you save in other areas.
See, I thought you were about to say, when you have $100 million, they will find you.
Unless, of course, you're Woody Harrelson.
You know that I have a very soft spot for Roland Emmerich films, apart from that one that shall remain anonymous.
Oh, but you mean Independence Day Resurgence?
Oh, the one about the guy who really wrote the Shakespeare plays.
Don't you even start with me.
The real...
Because you think it's bad to be educated on bezoars and entropy, but it'll get a lot worse if I have to sit down and explain why you should be a Stratfordian, okay?
A strap what?
Stratfordian.
So next week's guests, you'll be delighted to know, are Mark Rylance and Derek Jacobi, who will be sitting down and talking with Helen about the true nature of the author of Spielberg's plays.
Spielberg's plays. Yeah. I do that too. I talk about Spielberg's plays in Shakespeare's films.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. So I've got a little story which I find splendiferously promising, and that is that Arrested Development Season 5, as we know, is going to be hitting Netflix at some point in the next couple of months. And Mitch Hurwitz, the creator of Arrested Development, who has been on the podcast.
He has.
I think if you search for that, I'm not entirely sure when that was, but it was a really fun interview. He's a really fun guy. So do search for that. That was around Season 4, so probably 2013. So Season 5 is coming very, very soon on Netflix. And he took to social media the other day to say, sooner than you think. So maybe around the end of May. But the really interesting thing is that the much maligned Season 4, which debuted on Netflix a few years ago, and approached the storytelling in a very, very different manner. So the whole idea was he loved the idea that people would be binge-watching it, and so he set up each episode focused on a particular member of the Bluth family, and slowly, as you watched each episode, the storytelling would reveal itself. It was very, very layered, and you had jokes that seemed innocuous in episode 1 that would pay off in episode 13 once you got the full context. It was very Rashomon. There were lots of different viewpoints. But people didn't really like that. So Mitch Hurwitz has taken the time to recut Season 4 into a more conventional Arrested Development multi-character format, and that will be launching this Friday. Star Wars Day, today, in fact. So that is exciting, and that is maybe how I will spend some of my bank holiday weekend watching that, because genuinely, I really liked elements of Season 4, but some of it just did not work. And so you watch Arrested Development?
I've never seen Arrested Development. I'm completely in the dark. And you know what you should say when you're in the dark, don't you? Where's the candle? I'm sorry,
that was way worse than my Arnie impression.
I mean, yeah, okay. And it was a terrible joke, so, you know. No, I've never seen Arrested Development because it's comedy and I don't do well with humour.
This is true. James is an enemy of all things fun. So.
Yes.
Yeah.
In fact, if you see a comedy, then you have to... You know, good for us to flank Jimbo so that we can infect him with our comedy lols.
Yes.
And then you will enjoy the thing that you watch a little more.
You will understand that laughter is the thing that is meant to happen.
This bit is meant to be funny because we are laughing and he goes, oh, that is a trigger. I will do it. Yes, okay.
Yes, I absorb it through osmosis.
Yeah. But do you watch any comedies? Any small screen comedies?
You liked that one recently.
What did I like? I liked something.
The Good Place.
Oh, yes, I like The Good Place. Yes, yeah. that's you know, what's the word again? Funny, yes, that's with the funny.
You like Friends?
I don't do Friends. No, the TV series?
Yes,
no. I like Friends, the TV series. I find that, again, that gives me a small smile.
He allows himself three small smiles a week.
That's right. Blackadder and Fawlty Towers, I'm, of course, a fan of, you know, from back in the day.
Python?
But not a big Monty Python fan.
Okay.
It's very much with me. It's like, and I know now why you laugh, but it is something I could never do.
The Office, US and
absolutely
UK?
Not. That is like a humor vacuum for me. Like any, like, Curb Enthusiasm, any of that stuff with that kind of comedy of embarrassment, I can't. It just makes me want to crawl under a table and die. I can't. I cannot. I can't abide it. It's my kryptonite. It physically pains me to watch it. I can't. Can't do it.
I'm just not clear. Do you like it or not? I'm still in the dark. I wish you'd be more emphatic.
It's excruciating to me.
Wow.
Same with Partridge.
So you watch Arrested Development because it is fantastic.
It is amazing.
It's really, really good. It's very, very funny. It's very smart, very sippy. And there are about 75 different characters. So if you don't like two or three, you will latch onto other ones.
And also, it's really you'll get to like the two or three.
I did see the episode with the analropist. Business card,
and that's an amazing joke.
That was a very good gag.
Yeah,
this is me. This is my happy laughing face. I am. Wow. This is me amused.
Yeah, that's like Fox Mulder's shocked face.
I'm
if any of you remember that
inside.
From the X-Files movie. While we were talking, I was checking Twitter because you were boring me, and someone coincidentally has sent me a picture. He says, turns out the Avengers were at the Battle of Midway. How does this fit in with the MCU timeline? And he's sent pictorial evidence, which is a group of runways on the Midway Atoll itself in the shape of the Avengers A. So that is pretty compelling, I have to say. Ed Casson, hello. And it's also on the Wikipedia page, so you guys can check it out there. Yep. If you look at the Battle of Midway Wikipedia page, it's about halfway down. Yeah, I can only hope that that's in, you know, Captain America 4, that somehow happens at some point when Chris Evans comes back.
This is really freaky, after his head fell off, you mean?
Yeah.
Because someone was cutting all his hair off and his head his head became unbalanced and just fell off his shoulders. That's exactly what's going to happen. So that's really weird that Ed Casson, he would send us that because he sent it to me as well. So check it out, Ed Casson, or just check my timeline or Helen's timeline. So that's obviously Chris Hewitt and Helen L. O'Hara. Why L. O'Hara?
L for loser. No, it's for love. No, it's not. It's for Louise. It's somebody already had Helen O'Hara,
okay,
basically.
Those dickheads. Right.
You never tweet either.
I mean, I would ask who, but...
I'll go you one better. Why?
Okay, so that was movie news. And as you know, this week's podcast is sponsored by Sky Cinema, which gives you unlimited access to the best movies at home, whenever and wherever you want. If you wake up 3 a.m. and you're jonesing for a fix of quality premium cinema, then you can do so via Sky Cinema. Amazing. They have over 1,000 quality movies on demand ready for me to enjoy whenever I want. A brand new premiere on Sky Cinema as of this week is Christopher Nolan's brilliant and thrilling World War II epic Dunkirk.
Okay.
In which a phenomenal cast, including Kenneth Branagh. Hey, by the way.
Yes.
Did you know that the voice at the beginning of Infinity War?
Yes.
There's a distress signal is sent. Plays over the Marvel Studios logo.
Yes, that
is Kenneth Branagh.
Mm. Is it?
It is.
Did you know he has a tiny cameo in Chariots of Fire?
But this is better.
Well, okay, yes. But
this is better because I actually did some digging. I confirmed this myself in my attempt to be a one-man Woodstein and Burnwood. You know the guys who brought down the Watergate Hotel?
Yes, that's right.
They did.
You know, they were trying to take down the hotel, and then Law of Averages suggests that he will take down the president eventually.
Oh, God.
I think that's what happened. I saw that in that film. I did some digging. I put on my little cap with the press badge stuck into the rim, and I said, hey, is that Kenneth Branagh in Infinity War? And this shadowy source whom I met in a underground car park, I emailed. I said, yes. If you're wondering who the Pulitzer Prize winner for journalism is next year, it's me. Sorry, guys. I got the scoop. So, Kenneth Branagh is in Infinity War, which makes sense, of course, because he was the director of Thor. So, it's all... Anyway. But he is also in Dunkirk alongside a fantastic cast. Mark Rylance is in there. Tom Hardy is in there. Finn Whitehead. Who else? Cillian Murphy is in there. And a young newcomer called Harry Styles, who shows that he's more than just a beautiful singing voice, that he can act as well. And this is the story of the evacuation from Dunkirk in 1940 when Britain was up against it. Makes an interesting double bill, I would say, with Darkest Hour, but this is a much better movie. This is Christopher Nolan bringing all his epic filmmaking skills to bear on this. He tells the story of the evacuation in three different time frames. So you get the evacuation on land with thousands of soldiers trapped in Dunkirk Beach. That takes place over a week. Then you have the attempt by lots of British sailors, domestic sailors. Their ships are commandeered and there is a massive convoy of ships that sets sail across the sea to try and bring the soldiers back home again. So that's where we meet Mark Rylance. That takes place in the day. And then you have Tom Hardy as a brave fighter pilot alongside Jack Loudon, who's another fighter pilot. And they are taking on the German forces in the sky. And that takes place over an hour. And it all comes together in this wonderful Nolanian, it's a new word, I just pioneered it.
Yeah.
Nolanian, you probably pronounce it Nolanian, but law of averages suggests you'll get it right eventually. Nolanian technique, and it's on a par absolutely with the likes of The Dark Knight and Inception, and is one of the best World War II movies for a long, long time, I would say. It is really gripping, throws you in at grunt's eye view. You don't really even get given character names. You don't get to know these guys. There's no tragic backstory here. This is just a tale of survival, and it's fantastic.
And see, Sky were only expecting a quick read, and what you gave them was a Dunkirk spoiler special, and that's lovely. I think they'll appreciate that. It almost makes up for all the shit at the beginning. So, you know,
or indeed in the middle, where I started banging on about Kenneth Branagh in a different film.
Yeah.
Anyway, also out this week, a complete contrast, is Garth Jennings' wonderful animated musical, Sing, in which a group of animals, animated animals, have a singing contest.
Yes.
And it's fun and vibrant and has an amazing soundtrack.
It does.
And it's just a whole lot of fun. And hey, if you like your Garth Jennings, and we all do, he was actually part of the podcast team when the movie came out. And that's a very funny episode. Do check it out. He is a very talented, very, very funny man. And that really shows in Sing. So you go, there are my two recommendations for this week. One hell of a double bill. And join me next week for more Sky Cinema and possibly Kenneth Branagh-related fun. All right, so in time now for this week's guests, and I mean guests because there's three of the buggers, and they are Luke Evans making a return to the podcast, Daniel Brühl, SEMO himself, and Dakota Fanning making a long-awaited return to the small screen, or the big screen, or just any screen, because I haven't seen her in ages in anything.
Yeah, it feels like it's been a while. I think she's been just, you know, living her life. Back in the day.
This is The Alienist.
This is The Alienist.
The Netflix show that is available right now.
Mm, it's already out. It's
And this takes place after Alien 3, but before Alien Resurrection. I'm right in saying that, yeah?
You are incorrect. It is set at the sort of turn of the 19th to the 20th century.
I was right.
Yeah, just about there. It's actually about this team of people who come together to investigate a series of child murders, and they have to basically invent forensic science and criminal profiling as they go in order to do it. So it's sort of based on, like, all this stuff was happening at the time, like fingerprints were starting to be a thing. This is like 1890s, and fingerprints were starting to kind of be used and stuff like that, but it was all brand new and they didn't know what worked and what didn't. And so Daniel Brühl is a psychologist and he kind of leads the team and he's trying to essentially profile this guy. So it's kind of Mindhunters, the prequel.
Or
Criminal Minds.
I was about to say Criminal Minds 1843.
Ye Olde Criminal Minds.
Yeah, also
and
that.
He's Hotch.
I don't watch Criminal Minds. I just watch NCIS and then all the other letter shows I don't bother with.
I've seen the first episode of this and really enjoyed it. And someone described this as True Detective 1896, whatever it was, which I thought was a pretty good way of
looking at
the tone.
That's also not unfair. Yeah, there's a little bit of that tone in there as
but
well.
But the sort of turn of the century New York is extraordinary.
It was an enormous set. Like, it was apparently bigger than the one they built for Fantastic Beasts.
Where
like
was this?
This was in Eastern Europe. I think it was in Prague. Yeah.
I know where it was.
Was it?
It was in Budapest.
Was it in Budapest? I was in Budapest. That's where I was.
And I know you were in Budapest because Ben Travis did the interview for this.
Right.
And we were chatting back and forth about questions. And I went, oh, where was the shot? And he went, Budapest. And I went, did you know there's a statue in Budapest of Columbo?
I didn't get to see that. And now I feel like I've wasted my entire trip, I'll be honest.
But so he talks about that.
It was I had a very nice time in Budapest. And it was an incredible, incredible set. Like, they made it this huge place. And I think they're hoping to go back for a second season. And I hope they do. The second book is really creepy.
Wow.
Alienist Resurrection.
No, still no.
Alienist versus Predatorist?
Yeah.
Oh, God, no. Anyway, enjoy the interview.
Hang on, Helen. I get to do the links around here. So this is a man talking to some other people about something. Well, I wasn't really listening.
Thanks, Chris.
Okay. Ben Travis talking to people?
Sure.
Can you do it, actually?
Ben Travis talking to Daniel Brühl, Luke Evans and Dakota Fanning.
See, that's where they pay the big bucks. Enjoy.
So we're delighted to be joined on the Empire podcast by the stars of The Alienist. We've got Dakota Fanning, we've got Luke Evans and Daniel Brühl. How are you guys doing?
Very well.
Very well.
Well.
So this is your new series that's coming to Netflix around the world. It's set in New York, it's filmed in Budapest, and now we're here in Rome to talk about it. Where else are you going to travel with this show?
Quite a few other places. We've been all over, haven't we? It's been... Interestingly, because it went on American television first, on TNT, we did Sundance and New York and Los Angeles. We had a big premiere in Los Angeles, which was very special. Then we had a little break, and then we did some more press
in London.
Mm-hmm. And now we're here, and we're going to New York next month. And so it's an ongoing tour, but, you know, I never get bored of talking about it because when you've got 10 hours of content, it's a lot, you know, and we've now shot it, we've now seen it on screen, we've now got a fan reaction from the American audience. There's a lot to talk about, and it's lovely to see that everybody's embraced it and have loved it as much as we love shooting it.
Yeah, absolutely. So on that topic, this isn't your typical period drama. Which of you wants to kind of set up the idea of the show and tell us a little bit about your characters?
Dakota one.
Well, I think a lot of people are unfamiliar with what an alienist is. There's no aliens or sci-fi element in this series. An alienist was a term in 1896 for a psychologist, and this show is kind of about the birth of psychology and the birth of forensics, and it's set in New York City, which is a very changing time period. It was the Gilded Age on one hand, and also you see a great disparity between the rich and the poor and the immigrants and everyone trying to figure out their way. And so the show really highlights that through an investigation. And I play Sarah Howard, who is the first female to hold a position at the New York Police Department for the police commissioner, who's Theodore Roosevelt at this time. And Luke is.
Shall I carry on? Yeah. So I play John Schuyler Moore. And almost forgotten his middle name. Not many people use it, really, in interviews, but I like it. John Schuyler Moore. He is an illustrator for the New York Times. In the book, he was a narrator mostly, but in the show, he's part of the team, and he's. But because of that, we were able to give him much more of a backstory, and he's an entitled individual. He comes from money. He lives with his grandmother in a very nice part of New York. He is an old Harvard friend of Laszlo Kreisler, seems to be one of his only friends by the look of it. he's the only one with the most patience. He suffers with addictions. He's a highly functioning alcoholic. He doesn't really have a purpose. He's sort of wandering through life, and he's been jilted by his fiancée. He's dealing with the grief of his brother's death. He's just a bit of he's a lost soul, and it's that's how you meet him, and you think, oh God, you know, where's this guy going to go? What's he going to contribute to this story or to the investigation and to the team? And through the help of his friend Laszlo and this terrible crime, he's drawn into it reluctantly at first, but finds his way and becomes a part of it. And it's a saving of him, really, I think.
Now, the amazingly named alien himself.
Yes.
Laszlo Kreisler. What character name?
Yeah, well, Laszlo Kreisler is the alienist, is the psychologist, and as Dakota said, psychology had just been born 20 years prior to that. So these guys were the first ones, were pioneers, progressive, modern, liberal thinkers, and obviously had many enemies in society because there were still many prejudices and ignorance when it came to mental diseases. And he's a very smart psychologist, but he knows perfectly well that this will be a very complicated case, and he will not be able to find the killer if he doesn't get the support and has the help of, you know, equally brilliant people around him. And then this interesting team of social outcasts and pioneers, each one of them in their own field, come together. But again, the case is far more complicated than they would have thought, so that rises the tension within the team. Mm-hmm. These were the scenes that I personally liked the most, you know, when the team struggles. And eventually they managed to find the killer.
Amazing. So with this partially being a period drama, a period setting, let's talk costumes, because you filmed this for 6 months, right?
We did. Well, I will say some of their costumes were equally as uncomfortable as the corset, probably, so I'll give them some credit. We filmed March to September in Budapest, and it was, you know, supposed to be winter for some of the series, and it was very hot, in fact. So there was a lot of sweaty days for all of us. But yeah, I think, you know, I've had to wear corsets before in films, not for this amount of time. This was the longest I've had to wear it. So I feel like I'm as close to experiencing what women in 1896 experienced as probably anyone. And so as uncomfortable as they were sometimes, it was actually really a privilege to wear the costumes, because Michael Kaplan, who's the costume designer, is just like such a genius, and they're some of the most beautiful, authentic, handmade costumes I'd ever worn. So
I was impressed by your shoulder.
Oh yeah, everyone was. Yeah. The sleeves are infamous. Yeah.
So while you've got the kind of the period settings and like the beautiful sets and stuff, there is also, it's quite a dark series. What was the grimmest thing that you saw on the set, from the blood and the guts and the murder scenes? Tell me a bit about that
side of it. Well, that's hard. It's hard. I mean, every episode has something rather gruesome in it. I mean, I guess maybe the first one for me, when I was sent to the on the first episode, John is asked by his friend to go to sketch something. He doesn't tell him what it is, because if he had, he probably wouldn't have gone. And it's the first murder of this child, and he has to sketch it. He's never seen a dead body in his life, and for me it was so real, and it was on a bridge, and it was snowing, and it was a really dark moment, and it sort of reminded me of the next 6 months. I was about to see quite a few of these bodies.
I find it creepy when they talk about it, when the department, the special effects department, talks to the director, and then they have that corpse in front of them, and then I always find this very, very creepy. We need more blood in the eye, and then we need the skies to go deeper, and then that's not blue, the skin is not bluey, or whatever. So it's this nerdy, weird conversations, you know, that that you have on a day, you know, in order to make it look as authentic as, you know, as it does in the show.
And are you guys crime show buffs in general? What was the last show you binged? If a new crime show comes out, are you kind of rifling through all the episodes?
Yeah, I've actually enjoyed that kind of show in the past. Know what it is yet. It's not the last show that I've binged, but yeah, no, I really liked The Alienist for that element, because I've always been fascinated by kind of criminal psychology and the why, you know, why we do what we do, good or bad. So I was definitely a fan.
And what about you guys?
Mindhunter is recently watched. It's the first thing that comes to my mind. It's brilliant. And then also period, different period, but what Dakota said, to go back to the origin of so many sciences, of psychology, of crime psychology, that's what I found interesting and endearing, you know, to see that team being impressed by fingerprint, you know, all these things that we take for granted. I just love that scene, you know, when we all open our eyes and so that was part of the joy.
You guys filmed for 6 months in Budapest. That's a long time. And you must have been together for a lot of that time. What did you do when you first all arrived in Budapest together, to kind of bond and to hang out? And did you go out in the evenings together? What was it like getting to hang out in Budapest?
We all lived in a very nice part of Budapest. Mm-hmm. And we were there at the beginning of the late spring, early summer, which is actually a glorious time to be in Hungary. I mean, it really is a fun city, and the doors open and everybody eats outside. It's very al fresco, and we connected very, very quickly, almost the first time we met, and so that was a relief in itself that we were going to get on. And we enjoyed each other's company out off the set quite most weekends and evenings. We would go for dinner, and we celebrated birthdays there. I think mine was the first one. You mm-hmm. went. You got married while we were shooting it.
Wow.
You know,
in Budapest,
in Spain.
In Spain.
In Spain, but that was my only break that I had, my only window of 7 days.
We gave him 4 hours off.
Yeah.
Did you guys go to the wedding?
We had to work because he wasn't there, yeah, so they had exactly. to film something.
They were invited, though.
We were invited, yes. We've seen the pics, but we weren't there, unfortunately.
And what did you do on birthdays? Because Budapest, I was there earlier this year, and it's got, not in a kind of nightclub kind of way, but a really nice sort of evening bar, pub kind of scene.
That's a nightclub thing, too.
Yeah. That's great. I mean, they have these things called ruin bars. Mm-hmm. And there is one, which is a club that we used to frequent every now and again. It was great. It was really special. It kept it like an old ruined house. Mm-hmm. I had my birthday there, didn't I?
Yeah.
Reminded me of Berlin a little bit.
Mm, yes,
I felt like I was at home in a way, like Berlin used to be a couple of years ago.
Faded, grandiose, mm-hmm. you know, big stone staircases, but falling down a little bit. But they've embraced that because there's so much of it in Budapest. And that's why it also worked so well, as we were able to use many interiors of some of the grander buildings for, like, the location of Delmonico's, the restaurant which we go to many times within the 10 episodes. That was actually a library, and all we had to do was put tables and dress the tables. Everything else was exactly as it is in the show. And that was quite amazing, wasn't it, when we yeah. got to see these places like the Opera House as well, and some of the streets. You know, all we had to put down was some cobble, and there we have it, mm-hmm. New York City.
Mm-hmm. And when you guys were going out in the evenings, did you brave the sort of local spirit, palinka, which is
palinka.
Like pure,
yeah.
It's like pure paint strippers.
We had no choice.
I actually liked it. I liked palinka, and I also liked unicum, which is the other.
Unicum
is really good, and it's the other kind of spirit of Hungary.
How are they different?
Oh, they're completely different. Mm. Unicum is like a Jägermeister more, so.
It comes in like it's a cannonball with a big red cross
on
the front.
And it was originally made for the king of Hungary because he had a bad stomach, and mm-hmm. so this was like an herbal remedy for the king, and that's how it became a
thing. This will make you feel better.
I'm Budapest's biggest fan, by the way. I loved it and didn't want to leave here. I loved it so much. So
are you angling for series 2 so you get to go back out?
If that were to happen, I would not complain.
And the other thing that Budapest is really known for is the communal baths. Did you guys go and take the communal bath together?
Yeah.
You make it sound a little weird.
Not together. Not together. No, they're usually men and women.
Yeah, they have separate. Yeah, they're still separate. But those places, I mean, there's one, Rudash, which was on the Buddha side of the river, which goes back hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years, like 700 years, I think. So so they're not only, you know, a bath which is heated by the natural springs underneath Budapest, but you're looking at, you know, historical buildings which have been there for a lifetime. They were really very interesting, and that water has got stuff in it that other water from around the world doesn't have. The minerals are very, very powerful. So, yeah, we all made the most of that.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. But one other thing that I don't think anyone's quite figured out why is in Budapest, but there is a statue of Columbo, who's obviously all those, like, famous American.
There's also Ronald Reagan's statue as well,
Did you go and pay homage to the Columbo statue while you were making your own?
I didn't see it. Did you see it?
I don't know, where was it?
I heard about it, but I didn't. Yeah. I did not see it.
I mean, the Reagan one was.
I saw the Reagan one.
Didn't pay tribute to that, but
I shook his hand because his hand is in front of him as he's walking, and it's really shiny. So obviously, it's the thing you do. You should shake Ronald's hand. So,
but Columbo, yeah,
it's so funny. I know. Why is that there? We don't know.
He knows, and it's his dog as well.
Yeah.
He must have been.
Then there was the birthhouse of Houdini. I remember.
I went to that.
You did.
Yeah. Yeah, was it his house or was it just a museum?
I think it was his house when he was born.
But one fun fact about the hippo lake is heated by the natural springs, so they have a hot pool the whole year round. Yeah. How cool is that?
That's the only info fact.
So what do we see all of you guys in next? And hopefully you'll be working together possibly on a season two. Like, well, we haven't seen all the episodes yet, so who knows? Maybe you're all dead by the end of season one. But what are you guys in next?
I have a little break now, and then I'm going to work with Julie Delpy, who is a friend, and we've worked with each other a couple of times, and I'm happy to be able to not also be in the movie as an actor, but also be one of the producers, which makes me incredibly proud because it's my first credit, and I'm doing it with her, which is, you know, great.
And Luke, what have you got coming up?
I just finished a movie in January with Octavia Spencer and Alison Janney and Juliet Lewis. It was a Blumhouse horror, I think we want to call it. Yeah, which is very fun in Mississippi. I think I have a film right now called 10x10. This is a small thriller with me and Kelly Riley. Noel Clark wrote it. Yeah, it's a two-hander based mainly in a room 10x10. Which is challenging. And I'm off to do a movie in Australia with Noomi Rapace, which is a very deep psychological drama. So that's what I'm doing next.
Fantastic. And there's a lot of talk at the moment about the Hobbs and Shaw Fast and Furious spin-off. As the original Shaw of the Fast and Furious franchise, do you want to appear in that? If Statham's in, are you in?
We also have to remember we have a mother as well.
Helen Mirren.
Yeah, so we've got, there's three of us now. And I think they would be crazy not to bring us all back. It would be fun. It would be really fun. I mean, it was nice to have a little cameo in Fast 8, you know, and turn up with a big scar on my face. And it's like, he's alive. I went to see it one night and the audience cheered. It was such a shock that they thought I was long gone, you know, so... A bit like you. We're not dead. We're still alive. You know, we could come back. So who knows? Yeah. I mean, it's just a fun. It's a fun role. It's a fun job.
And Dakota, you've got you've been working on the Bell Jar. What stage of production is that?
I know it's something I can't. There's things that are happening, but nothing that I could really talk about at this point. But it's been something that I'm very focused on producing an adaptation of that, and also will be in it. I guess I'm technically in Ocean's 8.
Yeah, well, you listed in IMDb, but yeah. Are you playing yourself in that?
I don't want to say anything, because I don't want to be the one that spoils any of it, but I am a little part of that, which was fun.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much, guys. It's been lovely to have you on the show.
Thank you.
And, hope to catch you all soon.
Cool.
Thank you.
That was Daniel Bruhl, that was Luke Evans, and that was Dakota Fanning talking to Ben Travis. And now let's talk about some of this week's big releases that have dared to peek out like little hedgehogs after a huge event, you know, like a rain shower, and they're going, is it safe? After Avengers Infinity War has decimated everything in its path, one-tenth of everything in its path. Has destroyed a lot of stuff. These are the films that are brave enough to come around in its second week, and that's lead with Tully.
Yeah, so this is the Charlize Theron film for Jason Reitman. And it is it's hard to know what to say about this film. It's a very interesting portrait of new motherhood. Now, that's not to say she plays a woman who's just giving or about to give birth when we meet her to her third child. So she already has two small children. She's already pretty knackered most of the time. Then she has this new baby and obviously is up at all hours of the day and night trying to feed the thing. Her brother, who's played by Mark Duplass, says, look, I'm going to give you a present because he's rich and has lots of money. I'm going to hire a night nanny several nights a week, mm-hmm. just to give you a break, just to let you get your feet back under yourself. So this night nanny will come in, will look after the baby when it's just fussing and you know, needs attention, nappy changing, anything like that, and will just disturb you if, as and when the baby needs fed. And otherwise, you get to actually sleep. So this is obviously a fantastic option. So Mackenzie Davis turns up, and not only does she actually allow Charlize to get some sleep again, she also cleans the house and bakes cupcakes and generally just helps her get a grip back on her life. Like, it feels like suddenly she can be one of those mums who brings in cupcakes to her son's class and, you know, seems to have everything under control. But at the same time, there's something a little bit off about things, and it isn't really clear what that is for a very long time, so I'm not going to say any more. Anyway, fantastic performances.
Yes.
And I think quite a realistic, I think, from watching people who've gone through it, portrayal of depiction, portrayal both at the same time, of, you know, what it's like to be incredibly sleep-deprived and absolutely tortured with tiny children. It's probably not one to watch if you are currently in that situation. If you currently are sleep-deprived and surrounded by small crying things, maybe just leave it for now. It's a very good film, but it's best watched when you're at a remove from that, I suspect. Yes.
Also known as being on the Emperor podcast for you, I imagine.
A little bit like that, yes. But really good performances, really, really good script by, of course...
Diablo Cody.
Diablo Cody, so, you know.
And this is the third collaboration between Jason Reitman and Diablo Cody after Juno, which I do not like.
Right.
And Young Adult, which I do.
Yes.
And that obviously has Charlize Theron as well. And they seem to be exploring very different stages of womanhood, in a way. So you have a young mother who's not ready for it in Juno. You have the Arrested Development, Mr. F, of Charlize Theron in
Young Adult.
Yep. And then you have this different stage as well. It seems to be interesting to me, or splendiferously promising.
Yeah, I think it is. And I think what they say about that is good as far as it goes. I feel like it could maybe have pushed a little harder in a few areas, but I haven't personally been through it, so what do I know?
What have you got against Juno, you freak?
I didn't like it at all.
But clearly,
how can you not like Jennifer Garner in that film?
Oh, everyone likes Jennifer Garner in every film. Right. Like, she could play
Electra,
a serial killer.
Like her.
True, she could.
Juno stars The West Wing's Allison Janney, therefore it is a 5-star film. We just need to accept that and move on.
Is that your new criteria for films?
Yes, yes it is.
It's not a terrible one, you've got
it's
to
not,
admit.
It's a superb one.
So if any member of the cast of The West Wing is in the film, automatic 5 stars.
Well, yeah.
Including the 4-star masterpiece, Molly's Game, which admittedly wasn't...
Don't make me destroy you.
3 stars.
Round and round and round we go.
Let it continue.
So 4 stars then for Tully, and that brings us next to another 4-star film, spoiler alert, and this is an animated film. This is Mary and the Witch's Flower, Jimbo.
It is. This is the first film from Studio Ponoc, which is the sort of anime phoenix that has risen from the ashes of Studio Ghibli, which involves a lot of their animators and indeed their one of their executive producers. And it's a triumphant first film for them, to be honest. I will not and cannot pretend to be an expert in Ghibli films. I have seen Spirited Away. I have seen My Neighbor Totoro. I'm sure I've seen at least one or two others, but I'm not a hardcore Ghibliite. That said, really, really enjoyed this. I found it more accessible than some of the Ghibli stuff I've seen, in that it has some mentalness to it, but not the sort of full-out Ghibli at its most bizarre. I thought it was slightly more traditional, but it has the same kind of central character, sort of very precocious, bored with her life kind of schoolgirl, which is Mary, voiced in the English version by Ruby Barnhill from the BFG. Mm-hmm. But obviously everyone here would opt to just listen to it in the original Japanese.
Not if it's a well-done dub, actually.
I think we all saw it in Japanese, didn't we?
I didn't.
We had an office screening of it and it was in Japanese. But anyway, so she, schoolgirl Mary, she spends the summer at her great aunt's house while waiting for her parents to arrive. And then she discovers a magic flower and a magic broomstick and is whisked away to the forest moon of Endor, where a heroic rebellion is...
That's
the wrong film. It's Endor College, which is essentially Hogwarts for anime fans.
Well, this comes from a book. This comes from another English children's book of the 60s, 70s.
Yeah, it's called Return of the Jedi, and it's very good in it. And I don't want to give away too much of the plot, but she finds a flower. The flower gives her special magical power. She goes to the school. Not everything is what it seems. There's a sarcastic cat. It's a lot of fun. I really, really enjoyed it, and the protagonist has magnificent animated hair.
She does. Yeah, she has very cool hair.
Could you eat it?
You could eat it. You could eat it.
You couldn't eat it.
You'd bizarre the shit out of that.
Oh, my God.
What I love about this, it ends with a kind of... It begins with a cold open, which is an amazing sort of escape action sequence, which is, for a film like this, you know, it really drops you in at the deep end, gets you very engaged very early on, and then it slows down and you get this sort of bucolic, pastoral, and it's slightly odd with regional English accents, but it's a lovely beginning to a film which kind of gears up into something rather unexpected. So I think anyone who enjoys Ghibli, certainly early Ghibli, will enjoy this, and anyone who, you know, has a soul will probably like it as well.
Yeah,
I think it's, you're right, it's missing something of the Ghibliness, and I personally did notice the lack of that kind of extra hit of weirdness. But again, I mean, like some of the Ghibli, like Arrietty or Howl's Moving Castle, it's based on a classic English children's book, and this one is perhaps less of a, I think it's a less good story than the Diana Wynne Jones, but it's still kind of a lot of fun. It is unfortunate that now you see this College of Magic and you just think Hogwarts, and you hear Endor and you just think Ewoks. But, you know, they maybe could have changed a few more lines, because let's face it, they've changed a bit already. But yeah, no, it is really fun, and it does scratch that Ghibli itch. Although, of course, Miyazaki's back and making another film, so...
Yes.
Yeah.
We'll have more to come.
Scratches are plenty.
Yes.
4 stars in for Mary and the Witch's Flower. There are a couple of other films out this week. There is the new film from Andrew Hay, the director of Weekend and 45 Years, and this is Lean on Pete. And this is a tale about a young boy played by Charlie Plummer, no relation to Christopher Plummer, who of course was in All the Money in the World as well. He gets a job with a horse trainer played by Steve Buscemi, and there's a horse called Lean on Pete. And the horse is in danger of being sent to the knacker's yard. So Charlie takes the road in search of his long lost aunt. We gave this one 4 stars.
Lean on Pete's real name is Starsky. That's my fact for you.
Wow, really?
That's the horse's real name, yeah.
And do they keep him in a hutch?
They might well do.
Wow, that's amazing. So there you go, 4 stars for Lean on Pete. Also out this week, 2 stars for I Feel Pretty, which is the newest movie from Amy Schumer. We were not kind about the trailer on the live podcast a few weeks ago.
We
haven't been kind on the film, but none of us here have had the pleasure. I will just say what our reviewer says. An intermittently funny vehicle for Schumer that never really gets to grips with the ramifications of its high concept. Its heart is in the right place, but its head is somewhere else. So 2 stars in for I Feel Pretty. And Helen, you have another movie that you would like to bang on about.
Yeah, I'm not sure if it's still in cinemas, if it was only there for a day, but it came out yesterday, and it's called Nothing Like a Dame.
Mm-hmm.
And it is literally a film where dames Judi Dench, Maggie Smith, Joan Plowright and Eileen Atkins sit around in a house and talk.
This sounds amazing.
It is amazing. It is so good. They are absolutely hilarious, and no holds barred, and exactly as funny and smart as you would expect. And yeah, it's quite moving at times as well. But there's little glimpses of their back catalogue going back literally 50 or 60 years, and it just reminds you how bloody awesome they all are. So honestly, if you get the chance to see it, I believe it's going to be on TV over the summer if it isn't on demand already. Definitely do check it out. It is basically like hanging with the Dowager Countess and M for an afternoon. It's really good.
That's quite the sales pitch.
Sadly, it is already out of cinemas. It was on Wednesday. It was a
one-day thing.
But it sounds fantastic, so do check it out. I did a quick search there now on Amazon for Nothing Like a Dame, and did you know that there are several things that are called Nothing Like a Dame? There is the Scandals of Shirley Porter. That's in paperback right now. There is a Nothing Like a Dame, Conversations with the Great Women of Musical Theatre. That is an out-of-stock book, but out-of-print book, rather, but you can order that. And Elaine Smith's autobiography is Nothing Like a Dame, My Autobiography. And Thora Hird's autobiography was also Nothing Like a Dame.
Wow.
There you go.
Nothing in this world.
See, you come to the Empire podcast for...
Peter Dinklage impressions.
Bezor, yeah. And you leave armed with that sort of knowledge.
And prognostications.
And Starsky. And your stuff about... I mean...
Mm-hmm.
I'm struggling to remember what you said.
Yeah.
But it was something about something.
Not knowing the law of averages?
Yeah, but eventually I'll get there.
Yeah.
Law of averages suggests that
I
will get there in the end. All right. Okay, so that is it. So Helen would give that 6 stars. 6 stars?
I would give it 4 stars, personally.
4 stars. Yeah. 4 stars.
None of that matters because you can't see it.
Yeah.
Do you think it'll be made a dame one these days, Helen?
No.
Dame Helen O'Hara.
I think you should be made a dame.
Thank you.
I think, but, you know, like in 50 years' time.
Right.
You know, because no one wants a young dame. Like Sir Bradley Wiggins, Sir Andy Murray. Too young.
Too young.
What would you like to be? You know, if the Queen was doling out titles, what would you have?
Well, it was interesting. In the film, Joan Plowright discusses the fact that she was a lady before she became a dame. And because Maggie Smith says it's better to be a lady.
Yeah. Is it? What, is it like, is there a ranking system here? Does lady outrank?
Well, I don't know how it works, but she was a lady through Laurence Olivier, obviously, who she was married to. So, I don't know, Maggie Smith certainly thinks it's a better title, and I never disagree with Maggie Smith.
What is a dame? Like, what is it? Like, what's the relevance of it?
I mean, it's just like an honour, isn't it? I don't know.
It doesn't convey any kind of special powers or...
Gets you a better table at Shake Shack?
Yes.
Right away.
Shake Shack?
Shake Shack,
That's quite specific.
They will not sit you by the toilet if you are a dame.
You need to be at least a baronet to get a Nando's black card.
Yeah. Also, you can kill people and get away with it.
That's not...
Total impunity.
Definitely not.
No?
No.
Love averages. Right, so that is it for this week's Empire Podcast. Join us next week for more film-related fun. We'll be joined by a double whammy of great British, and this makes me bloody proud to be British, great British character acting talent in the shape of Eddie Marsan and Clive Owen.
Wow.
Can you imagine such a thing?
My mind is blown.
I mean, we've wanted them for years. They said we would never get them. You can't get Marsan and Owen, they said. We got them.
Ta.
We got them. And did I ask them questions?
Did you?
I think I did.
And did they answer them?
I blacked out, I'll be honest with you. Anyway, so Eddie Marsan and Clive Owen are on the podcast next week. Hey, I should tell people as well as the Avengers Infinity War spoiler special podcast, there are a couple of other specials. There's a Tom Hiddleston Life as Loki special where we talk about his life as Loki. That's a lot of fun. And then coming your way over the next couple of weeks, there are two more spoiler specials that should be of interest to people. One, Deadpool 2.
Ooh.
Where we should be talking to Ryan Reynolds about that. And then number two is Solo, a Star Wars story, where we'll be talking to director Ron Howard. So that's very exciting.
Very exciting.
Very exciting. Okay, so until then, until that auspicious occasion, it is goodbye from Helen O'Hara.
Toodaloo.
Sorry. It's goodbye from Dame Helen O'Hara.
Toodaloo.
It's goodbye from... I don't think you'll ever be a Night Jimbo, I'll be honest with you.
Really?
Yeah, I don't think so.
That's Supreme Leader.
Oh, yeah, this is true. This is where it's going, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's Supreme Leader Dyer.
Yeah. Goodbye.
And it's goodbye from me, Viscount Hewitt. I mean, how I'm pronouncing it.
Yeah, I was going to say. It's not actually said that way.
No, it's not said or it's not pronounced or spelled that way, but that's what I'm going with anyway. Thanks a lot. See you next week. Bye.